Alvin Lee lyrics of so many decades ago, so prophetic. It's a special day, a Tuesday. Kind of feels like a Monday because of the long weekend, but it is a Tuesday. It's the 3rd of September as we turn the corner into the fall. I have a special guest, and I'd like to say an old friend with us today. I think you all know we promoted Deanna, and we're going to have her on in just a second and have a nice conversation because it's been quite a while since we spoke. Just to start out, Roger Sales, Radio Ranch, People's Patriot Network. And as we start off today, turning the corner into September, I noticed that the bond market stepped off a cliff as the market opened, and they desperately pumped it up. Pretty significant move from the normal routine. And also gold spiked $15 this morning up. So looks like we're stepping into the volatility we've been expecting for a while. And so Deanna Spingola, last week, hadn't talked to this gal in a couple of years, and my Skype boop came up, and it was Deanna, and she said hi, and I said, can you come on the show next week? Basically, we didn't have any too many formalities or anything. I was so glad to hear from you, Deanna. And so the day's here, and you're here, and welcome. It's been a long time. We were over at the other net. I call it affectionately ex-wife number 3. the last time that we spoke. So we got our own deal here now, and it's really good to have you. And it'll be a pleasure to hear what you got to say. And I know you got many fans in our audience.
Well, I appreciate that. I really do. Yes, September 3rd, my mother's birthday. And I was thinking, she's dead. But I was thinking yesterday, my first child, I went into labor on Labor Day with my first child. And so it was Labor Day, so, right?
Yep. You got a lot of important things to identify with this time of the year, don't you?
I do. Yes. Yes. And I believe every season has memories and things that, that we could relate to, or every day's a wonderful day. Every can be a wonderful day.
My father was alcoholic and was in Alcoholics Anonymous for 17 years till he died. And,
my mother was an alcoholic.
Also, so I was steeped in it when I was younger. And, their little saying of one day at a time, and this is the only day that God gives us, and he expects you to, do something with it. And so that's what we try and do here. That's part of the reason that for the show, for this program, for me, to help people that are struggling and looking and asking questions, truth seekers, with the very complex way that we've been enslaved, and for me to have somebody to talk to. Because I'm going to tell you, if I didn't have this, I'd be bored stiff. Okay. It's a whole bunch of things that work, and we're a very informal show, and have a core group of very loyal, smart, educated, aware listeners, and I see it before as a group of very strong individuals, and that's the only way we're gonna proceed in a good manner. It's the weak people in the big group that they can mess with and manipulate and all that. And as we're commanded to come out of her, and that's kind of what we've, I think, got a formula to do here. You can come out of her in all of her facets, geographical, political, and financial. So it's real special, I think, what's developed. Because I didn't necessarily start out to intend to do this, but it's the way the program has kind of developed. And I think we got some exciting times ahead of us. I'm pretty excited.
I think we do. We have some interesting times, some scary times, given the things that are occurring. And I just listened to many of the talks during the 5G crises summit, And on Saturday, I had a gentleman on my program that talked about the 5G, and it was just a very interesting program. I had Dr. Paul on, Martinell Paul, P-A-L-L. And as you say, I never really intended to do what I'm doing. It just happened because when you learn something, when you know something and have studied something, I believe you have a moral obligation to share it rather than to just retain it. I believe that what you're doing is a remarkable thing, and I think we're of the same kind of caliber, that we do feel like we have to share what we know.
There's a duty there, and as I've gotten deeper into it all the years, I didn't have to have this as motivation from the start by any means, but as I got into it and started dissecting it, and people had come up saying, what the hell are you doing this for? You know? And the justification, the mandate, if you will, is in the Old Testament, and it's the watchman on the wall prophecy. And that says, and I'm sure everybody's familiar with it, but it bears repeating, that if you see danger coming and you tell your fellow man and they disregard what you tell them, the blood's on their hands. And if you don't tell them, the blood's on your hands. And I don't want any more. I don't want any of their dirty blood on my hands. I mean, I've been sick of their crap since I was in college in Vietnam, okay? And conscious of all this stuff, and it, way back then, knew something was wrong. It just took me a couple of decades before I stumbled into the tax movement, and here we are, you know?
Right.
I know the audience, they know plenty about me, because we talk all the time about our stuff, and I know they want to hear about you, Deanna, so why don't you go into what's been happening to you, and let's get that out of the way so people know.
Okay. Well, my audience knows that I've had some health issues recently, and as a result of those health issues, it's really a kind of a remarkable thing I learned about, and actually you kind of hinted at this a couple of times on your program, when you were talking about the third eye, and you were talking about going out and gazing at the sun and that kind of thing. And I just kind of kept put it aside. And I learned about energy medicine because I was having some terrible issues. I was in a situation where in June of 2018, I was really, really, really sick. I was just horribly sick. And it was a lot of sickness is stress related. Mine was definitely stress related. And I had gone from, in 2015, I weighed 135 pounds. And in June of last year, I weighed 101.
Holy smokes, Deanna.
And my, it was a Friday night, and I was coughing because I have something called bronchiectasis. And bronchiectasis is a result, I had IBS first, and IBS is stress related. And what happens is it presses against your diaphragm, and it somehow presses, does something with your lungs. So I developed this horrible cough, and I had every year for like 3 years, I had pneumonia, I had bronchitis, and it was all stress related. And in June of last year, on a Friday night, I had a really bad coughing spell, and I felt a lot of pain. And the next day, of course, I had scheduled a program, as I do every Saturday. And I Skyped the person that was going to be on the program. And I said, I Skyped him the next morning. I said, I'm really hurting and I can't breathe very well. Could you be the host as well as the guest? And I had another guest on with him. And he said, sure. I love him. His name's Dave Kahari, and he did the program for me. And so I was really having an incredibly difficult time, but I went about my duties, went about my activities. Sunday, I went to visit somebody in a, I went to visit somebody, and then Monday, I was just doing terribly, just really bad. I just sat on the couch all day and did nothing, didn't even get dressed. Tuesday, it was about the same thing, and my son came into town to visit my daughter, who recently passed away. She had metastatic breast cancer. She passed away on the 8th of August. And anyway, on Wednesday, we were going to all have breakfast over at Rebecca's. And he stayed overnight over at Rebecca's on Tuesday. So Wednesday, I got in my car and I went over. And Rebecca said, and I was going to take care of her on Thursday morning. And she said, "Mom, you're in worse shape than I am." She said, you can't do this. And after breakfast, I went and I picked up my co-op order at the at the place where we pick up orders. And although that was later in the day, I was not feeling well, so I decided that I would call the doctor. And so my doctor couldn't see me, but the physician's assistant saw me. So I went in at about 3 o'clock, and we talked for about 45 minutes, which was lengthy, and he said, "Wow, you've got a lot of stress going on in your life." And he said, "I want you to go next door, right after the appointment, get a chest x-ray," which I did. And, then I went and picked up my co-op order, was having a terrible time, and he'd given me, some prescriptions. I don't really like to take prescriptions, but I was feeling so bad that I thought, okay, I'll go. And so I stopped at the Jewel, and I was feeling so bad. I thought, gosh, I just hope I can make it back to the pharmacy area without falling over, because I felt like I was going to just fall over any minute. And I got to make it out to the car, and I got to drive home. And I thought, because I was going to go and visit somebody after I got home, I was going to grab something to eat and then go visit somebody. And when I got home, my son was already here, and he said, "Mom, you got to get to the ER immediately. Your lung collapsed." And he called an ambulance. An ambulance arrived. I don't remember too much. They hauled me out on a gurney in the ambulance, and they immediately put this tube in my chest, which really hurt, and I could hear the air escaping. And I guess my entire right lung had collapsed, and it had a big hole in it. And so they took me to the hospital, and I was in the hospital for a week with a chest tube. And at that point, I was also experiencing severe diarrhea. And as I said, I weighed 101 pounds. And now I weigh 120. So I'm doing really well. But before I even left the hospital, one of my dear friends came over and got my iPad. And somebody had told me about breathing issues back in December of 2017, and about the Buteyko method of breathing. So I read about that and started doing breathing exercises when I got home, and have been doing that. And in conjunction with that, I learned about energy medicine. And I'm taking a 2-year class in energy medicine, and which we have the third class here at the end of September. It's four day classes, four times a year, and I'm learning a great deal. I do. I'm learning so much. I love it. I absolutely love it. I have a daily exercise program. I trace my meridians. I'm just learning so much, and I absolutely love what I'm doing. I love my life. I still have some lung issues, but they're getting better. The mornings aren't great, but I would say that I'm 75% improved over what I was at the beginning of the year. And I'm just doing a lot of very good things, including protecting my home in a better way. And as I said, I just listened to the 5G crises conference, and there are things that people need to do to protect themselves against radio EMFs, which are all around us. And so I'm doing that, and setting up safe places in my house. My bedroom's very safe. I don't have any electricity going there. I shut off my router every night. I could do a whole program on what to do to avoid being sick from the cell phone usage and all the nonsense that is associated with EMFs. But that's another program altogether.
Let me just ask you, have you ever heard of a device called Q-Link?
No, what is that?
It's been around 27 years. It is an electronic thing that allows your body to pass all those waves. And they've got a personal one that you can wear, and they've got a whole bunch of them now, back when I saw.
Oh, Keylink. Okay, yes, I do. I have all kinds of devices. I have all kinds of devices. But in energy medicine, there are certain things you can do to protect yourself against environmental things that are going on.
Right.
So it works hand in hand.
Sure.
But
I just know that's a proven product. And the reason I know it, I used to work a little bit with Dr. Len Horowitz in his AIDS.
Oh, right.
Okay. And when he was in the Atlanta area doing something, he'd ask me to come work, help him with the booth. And they had a natural health or alternative health seminar in downtown Atlanta one time. And the Q-Link booth was right next to ours, and they had this little like a kinesiology test, except it was picture. You could put your hand in this dark glove, and they'd take a picture of your aura before and after wearing that pendant. And I'm for 2 days, all day long, I saw them do that to people, and it never, not once, didn't work. And I, at the end of the show, I bought one. I've lost it subsequently when I was in Argentina. I'd like to get another one, but that is a, and you can't, if you go to Q-Link and search it out now on the web, there's a phone that's been introduced called Q-Link, and I think to access it, there's a shop.qlink.com or something address, but don't get it confused with a cell phone that's out there that's stolen the name. But that thing works, okay? And they've got whole house apparatuses and where you can do all that. I don't know about the pricing or anything else, but I was so curious about it that I went down when each company in one of those seminars has a 30-minute or an hour time to present their product more in depth. And I was so interested in it, I went down and sat through their presentation. It's a very impressive product. I know Rents has been promoting it for years, too. So anyway, not to deter, but we do like to talk about remedies around here, and that seems to me to be one of probably many approaches where you can get some of that out of your life.
Right. Well, I do grounding, which is also part of energy medicine. And part of energy medicine is working with your aura, working with your meridians, because we are electrical beings
yep.
who are living in an electrical society.
Yep.
But Q-Link, that's Q. Q-Link?
Yes, Q as in, you know, this guy.
Right.
Whoever's
right.
sending out all these mysterious messages of things that never happened, like him, except Link. It might be Q-Link. It might pop
right.
it up easier in a search engine. I'm not sure how they got it structured, but that product is. It's out there, and you can find it, and it's real good. I've been around. You don't hang around for 27 years and not have something going for you.
Right. Well, that is exactly what we do in energy medicine, but without the gadgets. Because we all have the capability of healing ourselves with the energy that is all around us. But I do have those gadgets, and I do.
Well, it sounds like from the early part of your testimony there, your story, it's like, yikes, you know, and it sounds like you've made a recovery and you're on the right path, and I can hear the brightness and the optimism in your voice, and I know that the audience is, and all of us are real glad to hear it, and the fact that you deviate back to what you consider to be a primary duty you know, Deanna, we're happy to have you back, girl.
Well, I have to obviously missed a couple of programs when I was in the hospital, and as soon as I could, I was back on the air and doing my thing, and I haven't stopped doing that because I can't, I won't, I. The message is still stronger. Well, it's getting stronger. Things are getting worse. Things are getting more interesting by the day. And
worse, but in many respects, from our point of view, things are getting better. I mean, this Jeffrey Epstein thing has exposed them. On every front, see the financial. They're even having to go up and put czars in the State Department against anti-Semitism, and the awareness all over the world is happening.
Right.
And it's scaring
right.
the woo-woo out of them, I think.
Yes, and I don't believe that Jeffrey Epstein is dead. Sorry, but I think he's probably somewhere. I don't think he's dead.
Could have spirited him off. I think it's more interesting to watch what's going on with Ghislaine Maxwell. And now this other guy, Brené, his accomplice over there in France with the modeling agency, has mysteriously gone missing now. So as I heard someone say, Giselle has a lot of connections in deep oceanography, and she's in the deep diving submarine somewhere.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I guess by getting worse, I don't. Well, they're still bad, but all these things are happening, and I'm hopeful that people are asking questions and really seeing the light, maybe for the first time. And thanks to you, and thanks to others who broadcast. I think I'm happy to be alive. I'm very happy to be on the earth at this time.
Well, I think our time is coming, and the information that we've spent so many years acquiring and noodling over and contemplating and coming to understand, our expertise that people are going to need to take advantage of all that.
Right.
Put into this, and you, there's not very many females in this movement that get up and beat the drum like you do, Deanna.
that's just always the way I've been. I just feel an obligation, in spite of the scorn and the attacks that I get on a frequent basis. That's their problem.
Well, you know.
If they,
I told the audience, I said, it's interesting to me to see how people get into the movement, you know, over the years. And many people came in through the tax door, or through, you know, traffic tickets, or through divorce and child custody and all that kind of stuff. But I said, you're the only person I know that's gotten into this through the knitting industry.
Knitting?
Yeah, through the yarn industry, you know.
It's quilting. Textile.
Yeah, there you go, quilting.
The textile industry, yes. I worked in the textile industry, and which is, it's pretty much dominated by a certain ethnic group. And I thought, and because as a 14-year-old child, I believed in the Holocaust, and I was trying to teach myself Hebrew, and I felt such sorrow. And then I thought, when I was a little bit older, and I think it was before that, I think too that the abortion issue and all the other stuff, there were other things that bothered me a great deal. Before I became aware of the Jewish question, before I became aware of what's going on in that respect, and I totally believed in the Holocaust, as I said, and just felt such sorrow. And it's because of the 501c3 church that I belong to, and I started asking questions in that regard. And they're like, it was like many churches, still is like many churches that are really, they're cults, actually. I hate to say it, but I did belong to a cult. But that's another story altogether. But, after I was, married and then got a divorce, and I was working in the textile industry, and I met all of these people who tried to cheat me, and I thought, not only were they trying to cheat me, they were trying to seduce me sexually. And I'm thinking, gosh, what kind of people are these? These are the people that I've stood up for, because they, you know, they were murdered and slaughtered, and now I find out that they're not a very nice group of people, because they'll cheat you out of everything that they possibly can. And although there were the person I worked for was gave me an opportunity. I went from being a housewife to being a salesperson, and I learned from experience. I had those questions early on, particularly regarding abortion. I thought, what? Somebody would kill their baby? Because another story about my daughter is that I was told by my doctor, I was very sick when I was pregnant with my daughter, she's my second child. I was incredibly ill, and the doctor, I spent most of the time in bed. The doctor said, you really need to consider aborting your child. And I said, no way am I going to abort my child. I'm not going to do that. No, absolutely not.
Now, did he have any kind of a medical reason, or was that just a spontaneous suggestion from your medical doctor?
No, it was a medical reason.
Okay.
Because I was constantly going into, I had to stay in bed. My body was just not doing well.
Right.
And he said, you know, you really need to consider that. And I had the faith, and I had I just refused to do it.
Good for you.
I just refused. I felt that I could, I was going to have her. I didn't know what she was because I would never consider doing an ultrasound. They didn't have ultrasounds. But anyway, I would not do that. And so I had Rebecca, I went into shock immediately after. I was so happy to have a little girl. Both my children were my miracle babies. And, I love them both dearly with all my heart. And after I had Rebecca, I had to have a hysterectomy about 9 months later. And, the doctor said, you know, you could have bled to death during the time that you were pregnant. And I said, well, I didn't. Now I've got this beautiful little girl. And, yes, I had her for many, many years. And I loved her, and I love her. She's just transitioned. She's gone ahead. She was a brilliant person. She still is. She always did everything ahead of time. She rolled over when she was 3 weeks old. By the time she was 9 months old, she had decided that she didn't like a wet diaper, and so she'd wake up dry. She was always ahead of schedule. I just never anticipated that she would be ahead of schedule and transitioning from this life to the next. But she did what she needed to do in this life. Now she's graduated. And I will see her again. And I've talked to her a lot since her transition. And she's just in another dimension.
Well, you know, Deanna, all of us that know you and what you've done and who you are with you in this time. And I know that we'll probably get some people saying some prayers for you. And you, it's difficult to deal with that situation. I lost a wife a while back, and I understand totally and completely. Okay.
Yes.
But as my mother told me, life is for the living. Okay. And as you say, she's gone on, they've gone on. We're the ones that have got to deal with this mess.
And, right.
And our duty, the way I see it, is to try and reach as many people who are receptive to our message. And I personally think that especially with what I've been trying to get across to folks, because it's very confusing the way they've set this up, and people have a lot of trouble with it. Some folks do. And that the ones that gravitate here and that do grasp it, the only conclusion I've ever been able to come to that satisfies me, Deanna, is that we're the remnant. We're the true remnant. And because we're the truth seekers. And God always leaves a remnant, and it's not, I heard it referred to just the other day on the show, somebody, and he couldn't get back and talk about it, but the end of, everybody paraphrases it as the end of the world, and I'd remind all of us that don't think about this consciously that that's not an accurate translation, and that it is the end of an age. And we're going into a new age. And it's exciting for those of us who've been aware and had the chance to prepare. There's going to be great opportunities for ourselves personally, and the fact that we'll be strong and able to reach the other people that, as the dust settles, are really wondering, you know, shaking their heads and wondering, what the hell happened here? Okay? That's our time, the way I see it. And it's coming.
Right. Absolutely. Yes. And, I'm happy to be here. I'm a joyful person. I am. Some bad things have happened. Those are just things that are that happened.
Well,
that's not who I am.
You know what? I've learned here in the last 10 years, especially with two accidents. I had one while you were distracted the last couple of years. I tried to step out a second floor window about a year and a half, a little over a year ago, and turned my foot in 45 degrees and spent spent about a year getting over that. So that on top of the auto accident that I had down there in Argentina, and what really has been hammered home to me is this little cliche that's thrown around cavalierly that says what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
I totally believe that. Strength comes from the struggle. Absolutely. That's the mantra. Strength comes from the struggle.
I like that way of putting
it.
So
bring it on. Bring it on.
We had a couple. I got Chris and Shane, two of my regulars here that chimed in. Chris, I know, has been listening to you and familiar with you for a long time. I bet he's called into your show. Chris, you out there? You want to say anything to Deanna?
Well, I'm just so thrilled that Deanna has come on to the People's Patriot Network with you and sharing her story, as touching and heart-rent as it is. Her story is unparalleled for many. The medical emergencies she's gone with, the loss of her beloved child. We all just love Deanna. We don't always agree with everything she says, but we certainly respect her opinions and have the penultimate respect for her experiences in life. And thank you so much, Deanna, for sharing with us.
Oh, you're welcome. And what opinion don't you share with me? Let's have a little duke out here.
Well, we have a little divergence on some of the Sandy Hook stuff and some of those things. You know,
oh, okay. Not, well, you're
and
just
I think we don't want to. Yeah, Roger always says part of the things they point out in the protocols, they want to get us arguing over things of little consequence. So in the big picture, I don't think those are really critical things that we diverge on.
No, and there are people who would have agreed with, who were on your side at one point, who have now switched. But that's okay. I wrote the book about Sandy Hook. I looked at everything, and I do my research. I am first and foremost, I'm a researcher. I don't accept consensus beliefs. I do
absolutely.
Well, that's
and that's part of why we respect you so much.
That's the only way we can step forward in a positive path, is to have the absolute truth and the facts to back it up. That makes that makes us invincible, because everything they do is always based on fraud. They can't
absolutely
do it otherwise. If they could do it otherwise, they'd have done it. They can't do it that way. But
right,
most of all, because they're chicken ship high in transits, unless they've got everything in their corner. But they've got to come over and do it with fraud. And so you go, you do the research, you find out who and why. And in our case, you belligerently stand up to them and preempt any of their moves. And it sure seems to work. Now, I want to take this call right here, particularly Deanna, because this is one of our friends who's down there in South Florida, and I've been worried about him. Hey, Bob, how you doing? How you weathering the storm down there?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's actually been no problem here. We're about 30 miles inland, 40, and the coast's been getting a little, but it hasn't even been too bad there. But, boy, I just cannot conceive of what they're going through in the Bahamas. They have just been mercilessly pummeled. I mean, I've never seen a Cat 5 that sat still that long. In fact, that's the historical record. Nobody has. It's just... Oh, my goodness. I can't imagine. I really can't. I don't even want to imagine
what that
would be like.
As you know, Bob, I follow those things closely for a lot of reasons. And that little rascal sitting there just hovering over the Bahamas, I mean, I'm sure, like you said, it is going to be tremendous devastation over there.
Right.
Well, you know what's fascinating to me is realizing that kind of energy is just on the doorstep, looking to the east. I mean, I'm sitting here right now looking east in the sky, and it's overcast and cloudy, so there's really nothing to see. But yesterday it wasn't so much. There were just feeder bands coming around. And to just imagine the immense power encapsulated in that storm, it just blows your mind. I mean, yep. I was describing it to my daughter. We were watching a sign whip in the wind, 30 mile an hour, big deal. And I said, you take that square footage of that sign, it's roughly 2x2. It was a diamond shape, But anyway, 2x2 square, that's 4 square feet. You can do the math. You can figure out how much force is being put on that sign. Now you take that times 20,000 square miles. I mean, it just it boggles your mind. You might do the math, but you still can't grasp it.
Nope.
It's just immense. But
well,
goodness.
You've been on my mind the last couple of days, especially as that thing was headed west with a little bit of brisk, and you guys in South Florida.
Boy, it had us right in the sight.
Ooh, man, did it! You guys, you skipped a bullet this time, brother.
No doubt, Deanna. I like that. What was it? You don't accept consensus, and something just popped into my mind. I like little one-liners. I think I ought to put a T-shirt out that says, consensus will make you senseless.
Oh, that's big.
You know, that whole groupthink, that Delphi technique. Well, everybody knows. I mean, it's the same idea. Everybody knows. No, I don't think so. But anyway, that just popped into my mind. I felt compelled to call and say it's really good to hear your voice again.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you very much, and stay safe. As you were talking, I was thinking about the weather warfare that was conducted in Vietnam, and how they decided in Congress to employ weather warfare as a policy. And so when I see these storms and their ability to harness energy in the way that they do is amazing. And of course it goes back to Tesla talked about the harnessing of energy, the harnessing of frequency and energy to wage warfare against other people is probably the most horrific. It's evil beyond evil.
Well, what about vaccination, lacing it with all that stuff? I mean, they're coming at us
sure.
from every direction. It's repulsive. I had a law teacher, Bob, on his comment there that was Gary Bryant, and people would say that, well, everybody says or everybody knows. He said, well, if everybody went and jumped off a bridge, would you go do it?
Yeah.
Right.
That's the old saying from mothers. Well, if all of them run off a cliff, would you follow them?
Yep.
Right. Join the lemmings.
In fact, a lot of people would.
Because
they wouldn't.
Especially,
there's no critical examination of the fact.
Especially these days, the herd mentality is rampant.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I brought this forward the other day, I believe, but for Deanna's benefit, I'll bring it up again. And it was this whole idea. There was this article talking about our friend Bernie Sanders, Mr. Socialist himself, and he's saying, you know, single payer. We've got to get to a single payer in healthcare. Right? I mean, this is Mecca. And then this is the guy that wants this to happen in every way. I mean, he's talked about it for decades, but he's saying that this consolidation in the media is a terrible thing because there aren't enough voices and they're shutting him out, and I'm saying, Bernie, don't you see the disconnect between your thinking? Why is it a good thing in one case, but it's a terrible idea in the other? Oh, it just amazes me how people can hold two different, entirely different thoughts in the same mind and not even see the contradiction, you know.
Right.
That just fascinates me.
Well, I saw the latest Mark Dice has a real healthy slice of Bernie campaigning in it. You need to go watch it, Bob. And this woman, this young girl, I mean, you see there's pretty good many people listening to him down in South Carolina, of all places. And, you know, the typical 18, 19-year-old girl going, well, can we ban meat because it's so bad against the environment? And they go off on all that tangent. It's how did we get this far off course? We let these people control the education process for a couple of generations, and look what we got.
Right.
Well,
you know,
there was not a Department of Education before Jimmy Carter. If my memory serves me correct, Jimmy Carter instituted that agency.
It came in under the Carter administration.
You know,
yes,
let me
correct.
Ask Deanna. Deanna, because the administrative state represents our bondage, really, when you start really concentrating on
right.
it. Very important to understand that. Do you know how many administrative agencies there are in D.C. now?
Oh, heaven only knows. I don't know.
Well, the last count, and I'm sure it's grown, that I took about 6 months ago, I saw it in an article, and I was shocked, quite frankly, 323. I'm sure there's more than that now.
Oh, my gosh. And when you look back in history, they, quote, unquote, took over education in this country in the early 1900s. With Carnegie and Rockefeller,
yep.
they really went forward with changing the education system at that point, and then it was federalized under Jimmy Carter.
Right, and Horace Greeley was even before that in the 1800s.
Right,
the West
right.
Man guy laid
yes.
a lot of the groundwork.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, it's so biblical. The deeper you get into this and study, you always take it back to biblical roots, and the truth's always there. And they've been telling us that for a couple of thousand years now, you know. And mm-hmm. it's unbelievable to me. You got to come out of her. And the beautiful part is that we do have ways to do that that most people don't know. And that's my big deal, is to let people know they got a choice. Whatever they want to do after that's up to them, and that's fine with me. But
sure.
I want them to know that they got a choice.
Right. Yeah, people
well, you know,
always,
the whole
always
thing
have
about
a choice.
The people undermining the education system, or perverting it, I won't say undermining,
yeah.
because to them, they're doing a good thing. But to me, it's a perversion, and that is, you know, like John Dewey.
All right.
Three decimal system. Of course, I learned about it when I was in grade school, and well, that's a great idea, right? And I was just absolutely shocked when I got older and realized that he was a socialist beyond all, and
right.
and really had nothing good in store, you know, relative to the founding fathers' vision of the country, et cetera, and just blew me away. I mean, the Dewey decimal system, that's a great idea. But and you know, the, Pledge of Allegiance. Anybody know the story behind that?
Oh, I do.
Mean,
I've written a lot about it.
It didn't even exist.
It didn't even exist
for the first 30, 40 years of the nation. But when it did come around, guess who's behind it? Some
exactly.
claimed socialist.
Exactly.
It's fascinating.
And I don't
it
participate.
Seems so altruistic.
I don't participate in that. What you're doing is you're pledging allegiance to the government. I don't... Really? I'm not going to do that. But that is what...
Well, you see, I blindly did that for decades. I did it because, you know, it's God and apple pie.
Right.
It's just... We were brought up that way in the government schools. Now, that's a
right.
shock, isn't it? Anyway,
yeah.
I had no problem with it. Now, there's a kid in my class. I remember in first grade, kindergarten, there wasn't anybody there that didn't do it. And in first grade, there was a Jehovah's Witness that didn't. And I had no idea what was going on. I just knew he sat down and didn't do it.
Good for him.
And I always thought that was kind of weird, and I have no particular anything good to say about the JWs. However, that part, in retrospect, I have to agree with. And I have since decided that it's something I won't participate in. But, you know, when we do the national anthem, I say we. You know, sporting event or something, I'll stand respectfully and I just stand there. I don't sit. I don't put my hand over my heart. I don't sing. I just stand up and try not to, you know.
Oh, come
but,
on.
But note,
Bob, you beller out Lee Greenwood a time or two.
Well, I have done that in derision, yes. That song just really gets to me after the last 10 years, you know.
Yes, I know.
It seemed like such a good song, but I'm proud to be an American where at least I know I'm free. It just makes me want to...
Oh, my gosh.
You know, this little catch in my throat like something's starting to come back up.
And I mean, there's tens of thousands of people standing up and singing that, and they're all sitting there being slaves. It's a... Woo! It's a mind bender, brother.
That old... Who's the quote I've heard... Brent come up with it a time or two, and I've read it, but I can't think who it is, talking about they rattle their fetters in proclaiming their freedom, you know?
Right.
What is that quote? I can't come up with it.
I don't know.
It's a good one.
I don't have it. We can ask him about it on Friday, though.
Yeah.
Deanna,
anyway,
have you heard our buddy Brent Winters? Are you familiar with him?
No, I'm not.
Oh, Deanna, I'm going to do you such a big favor. CommonLawyer.com.
Okay.
He's on every Friday. We've been doing Friday shows for about 5 years now or more. This guy's a national treasure. Okay. I mean, he's an attorney. He's written his own Bible with all these references. He's super prolific. He speaks, you know, and translates from Greek and Hebrew, and just an absolute send from the big guy. Okay.
Wow.
And we're tickled to death to have him, and I really would suggest you follow up and go listen to some of the stuff on his website or listen to one of the Friday shows. He is just a joy to do programs with Brent Winters. He's such a fine, fine guy. So, anyway.
You know, the word that comes to mind for him, Roger, is homespun.
Boy, I
guess. But don't let homespun equate to hillbilly or lack of education. That guy is spot on.
He's something, dude.
Anyway,
I'm
going to mute out. I'll be listening.
Okay, thanks. I'm glad you're all right down there. You've really been on my mind, and seems like all the guys in South Florida pretty well got off unscathed. I don't know too many that live over there on the beach. But anyway, I hope as many people don't get disrupted as possible. It looks like that storm is going to go right up the East Coast, though. So we're going to be dealing with it in the lower part of the country, the Southeast, for the rest of this week. People all up and down the coast are going to get damage from it. So anyway, good news is not hitting land, because our town got hit last year in that one, Michael. Deanna, and our family home, even as structurally secure as it is, had over $100,000 damage, and still not straightened out a year later almost. So those things.
Oh my gosh!
Oh Lord, that's one of the reasons I left Florida. I hate them things so much. So anyway, what have you stumbled in anything on our ethnic friends? I mean, I know you've been keeping your finger on their pulse and. As you're prone to do over the last time we haven't spoken.
Well, let's see. What have I been...
I heard some real glee. I heard a real brightness in your voice when I mentioned Mr. Epstein's name.
Oh, right. Right. I've done some programs on that particular... Well, on that subject, exactly. And have done programs with mothers who have lost children, who have been trafficked, and what a piece of garbage that there is no greater sin, I think, than to damage a child in the way that he did.
He did. How about they do?
They, because so I read somewhere where somebody said that America is a nation of pedophiles, and when you look at Hollywood, and when you look at the damage that has been done to young children, who have been damaged by directors, producers, and etc., what kind of parents would allow their children to go to Hollywood to become a child actress, actor? I don't know.
You want some of the history behind Mr. Epstein? There's a very interesting article. I think I picked it up the other night on Mike Rivera's site. I just got around to reading it last night. Zwei Migdal, M-I-G-D-A-L. Zwei Migdal. Ever heard of it, Deanna?
No.
Jeffrey Epstein's heritage. Zwei Migdal, a Jewish global crime syndicate trafficking Jewish women as slaves. I'd never heard of this. And it's even more poignant because it really centers in Argentina. All right. Zwei Migdal was a Jewish organized crime group founded in Poland and based mainly in Argentina that trafficked in Jewish women from Central Europe for sexual slavery and forced prostitution. I'll read a little bit of it here. It goes down, and the majority of the article is from the 2009, the International Jewish Coalition Against Sexual Abuse and Assault published a comprehensive article about Zwei Migdal, titled Understanding the Zwei Migdal Society, from which I am about to quote extensively. And the rest of the article is that. But let me just touch on the first part of it here, the setup, if you will. The story of Jeffrey Epstein has lost its mystery as more and more commentators allow themselves to express the thought that there is a strong possibility that Epstein was connected to a crime syndicate. It is. It's called the Mossad, with a Zionist political organization, or the Israel, and or at least a few, like the old donkey used to say, a few compromised intelligence agencies. What Whitney Webb and others have produced a superb study of possible scenarios. I would like instead to tackle the fact of the cultural perspective. It wasn't the first time as a Jewish sex trafficker. During the first decade of the 20th century, Argentina was a rich country. It outgrew Canada and Australia in population, gross, and per capita income. Just before World War I, Argentina was the world's 10th wealthiest state in terms of per capita. When Argentina was a rich country, large parts of its economy, culture, and politics were controlled by crime syndicates, particularly this outfit. And it goes into a lot of history here, and it's extremely interesting to me. And the one thing that is really sticks out, and I kind of heard you grasp when I read it in the title, Deanna, is they did this to Jews.
That's not really the first time that they have conducted terrorism against their own people in order to gain, in the case that I'm going to talk about, it was to gain sympathy for the Jewish people so that they could emigrate from the countries that they were in. They would do pogroms and then blame the local people for it. But they're the ones that terrorize their own people in order to gain sympathy.
Yeah, Zion, Israel was built with a lot of that.
Right.
And there's 20,000 Jews in Iran. And they don't want to go to Israel.
No.
This happened back around the turn of last century. I'm going to put the link up at the end of today's show description when I post today's program on CastBox.
Okay.
Because I don't want to go into reading it, but I'm telling you it's worth reading. And what happened to them here is one of the gals, after 5 years, saved up enough money somehow to be able to start her own little business. She had two sons by that time, and she went and found one local judge or prosecutor that was against this society. Otherwise, they had the entire political establishment in their pocket down there. And then he found a judge that was sympathetic and was against these people and what they were doing, and ended up putting 108 of them, I think, in prison. And then they pulled their political strings and got all but three of them out. It's a heck of a story.
And, oh, my gosh.
I had no idea, okay, that it went back. You can probably stick that in a search engine, a listener, if you want to look at it. I think it'd be interesting to see what it pop up, actually. Zwei, Z-W-I, second word, Migdal, M-I-G-D-A-L. I sent you the link on that, Deanna. I think you'll find it most interesting and give us a little more topical background and history should Mr. Epstein come up in conversation.
Wow. Amazing.
Somebody's done a video of that gal, and they've got a little snippet, a trailer of the film buried in the article down there. I watched it. It's not very long, but it shows some old pictures, and they wouldn't let them all of the hookers and the pimps, they first of all, they started excommunicating them from the synagogues, and then they wouldn't let them get buried in the Jewish cemetery, so they went over and started their own cemetery. And then all the pimps went over and started their own synagogue. It's pretty interesting. I had no idea all that down there. I never.
Oh
heard
my
of that
gosh!
Before. So pretty interesting stuff. A lot of, you know, what do they say? In the end days, everything will be known.
Right. The other thing that you said that I find interesting was that Argentina was once very wealthy, and I do believe that each area of the earth has resources. Every country has resources and can support itself. But then you have these people that go in and want to steal, to co-opt and take those resources and use all kinds of warfare. We've seen that, of course, in the Middle East and everywhere.
Let me tell you something very interesting about Argentina, because I lived there for 9 years, as you know. Argentina, the mineral rights do not run with the land. The government owns all the resources.
Wow.
That's why they want their hands on the country so bad. And and of course, if you go back and look in Theodor Herzl's original book on Zionism, he said there's only two places on the earth that's suitable for us, Israel or Patagonia. And they've got a heck of a foothold down there now. They got a Jew guy that used to be one of Soros's pals when they were bankrupting countries years ago. Broke the Bank of England and all that, participated in that, and he has set up virtually a colony down there south of Bariloche, where he is in total control of all of the electricity, the water, the local governments, and they've even built their own airport, which has no customs or Argentine authorities at it.
Oh my gosh.
That the runway is longer than the runway at the secondary airport in downtown Buenos Aires that used to be the main airport. It's called Aeroporto. The runway's longer than the runway at Aeroporto. Down there, a desolate airport all their own.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of reports of civilians, Israeli civilians, coming down there in mass and looking like they're out doing surveying and this, that, and the other. They also like particularly the southern part of Chile, and there's a lot of horror stories that have come out of there with Israeli tourists that are like IDF or something in civilian clothes,
right.
And they come and check into the hotel, and they go next door and steal all the chickens and cook them. Stuff like that. I mean, there's some really strange stories coming out of Patagonia concerning these people and their presence down there.
My gosh. Oh my gosh.
it takes your breath away, doesn't it?
It does. It really does. I'm looking at the whole picture, and it boggles your mind. It really does. That all these things could be going on, could be happening, and it is just mind boggling.
The
way that
they are such slime. The more I learn about them, the slimier they get.
Indeed. Oh, my gosh.
So did you have anything else particularly on your mind? I wanted to bring that Zwei McDahl article up during the conversation today because I figured, like me, nobody had ever heard of it before. And like I said, just cast a little more insight. Let me ask you, here's another real good resource. I think if you're not familiar with them, you'll probably really like once they get up on the air. They may be back up on the air today, is Rick Wiles' True News. Are you familiar with them, Deanna?
True News. Oh, yes, but I knew about that from another source. True News.
He's been around for a while, but he's got a heck of an operation down there, and I'm telling you, they've taken the gloves off. Okay? Day of Epstein's death, they had a crew out and did a reconnaissance mission on the Zorro Ranch. And they've been doing their own private investigation. They had a segment on the other night because they traced back. There was $1.5 million RV and another expensive vehicle, plus another vehicle connected to the ranch that were there. There was nobody there, but they got the tag numbers and started doing their own investigation. And they're ruffling a lot of feathers. And they had a New Mexico sheriff on there the other night for about 30 minutes. And who's a Christian, very godly. And New Mexico has one of the six states in the union that can force a grand jury with a referendum. And so they're trying to drum up a referendum out there to make them look at this stuff. And basically kind of force the FBI into doing something because they ain't done nothing with this Zorro
ever.
Ranch. Well, all they've ever done is cover up. And you understand that the Department of Justice and the Treasury were both taken over by the International Monetary Fund during the bankruptcy. So that's why the FBI has been compromised along with Justice, and Trump's been able to get so little done when he was trying to get something done. So let's see here. Hello. We'll accept you. All right. So, what else? Anything else on your mind you'd like to discuss, Deanna? If anybody's got a question for Deanna or you'd like to call in and just say hey and hug her, you're welcome to do that. And the number, if you call, is 404-448-1420. Or you can go to Skype and go to the search bar and put in PPN space hotline. And we'll connect with you like I did this gentleman that just did that. And you can call us on the silk screen. This is Let Me In. Boy, it's pretty demanding here. Well, I got... I think you need to... Okay, here you're going to call in. He took the prompt. Hello, live. I didn't get your name. I got a bunch of stuff up here as your handle. How you doing? Uh-oh, you might have mic problems.
Hello?
There you go. There, we got you now.
All right. New setup. Is Deanna still on the line?
I am.
Deanna's right here. Who are we talking
to? Yeah, I have through. My name is Shane.
Oh, Shane. You sound so
different. Yeah.
Well, you sound so different from over the phone. This is the difference for the audience and when you go the Skype route. I mean, it just makes all the difference in the world in the fidelity. Okay, Shane, good to have you there. Did you have a question or a comment for Deanna?
Yeah.
It's one of our old-time listeners, Deanna. Here, our regulars, Deanna.
Good.
Deanna, I have a question. Have you, three questions actually. One is, have you traveled outside of the United States?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Well, I mean, recently, you had to get a new passport, stuff like that.
The last time that I left the country was in 2007 when I went to China.
Okay. Have you, done some research in regards to what, Roger Sales is doing right here, right now?
Shane, I've been on her program a couple of years ago promoting the book.
Yeah.
Dare I say also, Deanna, that you also did a show with my teachers, John and Glenn, at least one of them, on the tax issue. Maybe more.
Right.
So Deanna's real familiar with our work. I don't know. Some people get it and some people don't. You know, it becomes easier as we go forward for us to explain it. But, you know, you can get out all this mess if you want, and they can't say a word about it. They won't.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, did you have a third question? Yeah, third one, Shane?
Third question is, would you like to spread this message? Or, would you like a spot on Roger Sales' Radio Ranch on
now, Shane, I'm not sure if that's a question to ask Deanna. I mean,
I'm sorry.
We love Deanna, and we asked. I invited her a couple of years ago in the network, and you were just getting into your in time of all your stress and stuff, and sounds like you're coming out of it, but maybe we'll entertain that down the road. That'll be totally up to Deanna. She's always welcome here if she wants to come put her hat over here on our peg.
Thank you, Deanna.
Thank you.
Hey, Shane, you sound about 1,000% better. I hope Chris was listening. So, where else would you like
Deanna?
To go? Oh, there's Bob again. Hey, Bob.
Yes, ma'am. Hey, if this isn't telling old dirt, I didn't hear the first part of the program. Would it be possible to give a short rendition of your coming of age, so to speak, in this? Understand, I know it had something to do with fabric and yarn and etc., but I've never heard the whole story completely.
Well, after my divorce, actually before my divorce, I decided, because my husband was my first husband, he kind of had some employment problems, so I decided that I would get a job. And I've always been very entrepreneurial since I was a child. When I was 12, I was going around passing out handouts that I would babysit. I've always been an entrepreneur. I've always done my own thing, always worked for myself. I've always done a lot of artistic things. And so I had this little business. I was importing laces and trims from England, and so I approached somebody that that I had actually purchased from, a company that I had actually purchased product from, and I was making dolls. I have done a number of very artistic things. I said, I would like to represent you. And he was kind of, he said, well, okay. And so I became a fabric rep and was doing very well. I was doing really well and making this company quite a lot of money. I got a contractor. I went up, and there was a company up in Madison, Wisconsin, by the name of American Girl Doll, and they just have this little tiny office in downtown Madison. And I went up and I showed them how to do heirloom sewing. I dragged my sewing machine up there and I designed one of the American Girl doll clothes and hooked them up with the people in Switzerland through this company that I repped. And the American Girl doll went on to own a factory or a warehouse as big as a football field. And so I made some very, very nice contacts initially, and then I began to, as long as I was out there traveling around, I might as well try and rep some other companies. So I repped Speckler Vogel out of New York, Roth Imports, Black and Sons, just a lot of people that I repped, and most of them were of a certain ethnic background because they do dominate the industry, of the textile industry. And so I came in contact with a lot of people who were either trying to cheat me on my commissions or seduce me physically. So I thought, wow, these people aren't very nice. And at that point, I still believed in the Holocaust. And when I was in college, I wrote some stories about the Holocaust, and about one was published actually in the college book. And so anyway, I had a lot of misconceptions, but I was always, when I learned something new regarding Holocaust, regarding Germany, regarding anything relative to history, then I readily admitted that, wow, was I wrong about that?
Yeah, really.
And on some of my websites, it's after you publish an article, you might as well throw it into a wind. It's like throwing a feather into a windstorm. Once you publish an article and it gets published on numerous other websites, you can't backtrack and say, oh, so I put a little top at the top of many of my articles that I now have different opinions about, that I have a different opinion, and hey, I was wrong. Wrong. And I've always loved history, which is why I wrote my trilogy, wherein I cover history from prior to the so-called Civil War up through World War II.
You know, one of our listeners, Daryl, renamed it very aptly, The War to Bring in the Civil Law.
Oh, that's absolutely true. It was to federalize the entire country. It was to centralize the government in Washington. That's all. Well, all it was.
There was a little more. There was another aspect. 14th Amendment was so they could control the world with it 100 years later. I firmly believe they knew that back in the 1850s.
Oh, they did. A lot of people think, oh, Andrew Jackson was such a wonderful person. No, he wasn't, which I've written a lot about him in my first book. But it was a war of aggression. It was a war against states' rights. It was a war against, it was a total war.
Yep, I'm sure it was.
They went after everybody.
I've gone back historically and tried to pinpoint when this really got started. Of course, 1776, May 1 is one of the real important days.
Right.
But when you get a little further than that in history, 1827, I got real curious about Reform Judaism. And I went back and started reading about it and studying up on it. And the Rothschilds formed Reform Judaism in 1827. And I think that was the beachhead that they were going to use. Past that, mm-hmm. as you go forward, the Second Bank of the United States and all that happened. But as you get a little bit further along, you see them bring Schofield into the picture. They were nurturing Schofield back in those days to set up dispensationalism, because as I heard a Jewish guy comment on recently, the Christian Zionist support for Trump is bigger than the Jewish support.
Wow.
Okay. So all this, man, these guys are sneaky and they're smart, and they got the greatest consultant down there below them. All they got to do is, sacrifice a child or two and get a little more information and insight on how to enslave us 100 years down the line. I mean, it's just phenomenal to me to get to my age and realize for the first time concretely in my mind that I know now why this war against the states, war of northern aggression, war to bring in the civil law, whatever moniker you want to put on it, of why that happened. And I've come to the conclusion that it was to get that 14th Amendment in place.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, do you know that they, on the 13th, and it's very interesting, on the 13th Amendment, they let the Southern legislators back in to vote on it. And that was in June.
What?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then let me hit my cough button for a second here. Speaking of coughing. And then they passed the 14th 6 months later, and they wouldn't let them in to pass the 14th.
Wow.
And rammed it down their throat. Now, if you look at those two together, side by side now, the new 13th and the 14th, you'll see both of the systems. And mm-hmm. I've never heard anybody look at it like this, because people don't really understand what's happened and what we're dealing with, the feudal system and all that. But if you look at the 13th, it says involuntary servitude is outlawed in the states unless a person has been duly convicted of a crime or anything to their jurisdictions. At the last of it, it's plural, their jurisdictions. That's right. The old original system. And if you'll notice, what they did was leave out voluntary servitude by omission. So voluntary servitude is legal because it isn't made illegal. Now, in
right.
the 14th Amendment, the next one, it reads, all persons born or naturalized in the United States, comma, and subject to its jurisdiction. First of all, there's your singular. Its jurisdiction mm-hmm. or the jurisdiction thereof is the way it's mm-hmm. worded. But now I'm going to fall back on my old buddy Al Adask here and thank him for this profusely, even though it took me 10 years to realize
all
it.
Right.
All persons born or naturalized in the United States, comma, it does not say are subject to the jurisdiction thereof. It says and subject. And if there's
wow.
some that are and subject, there's some that are and not subject. And it's right
wow.
there in the words, but people don't mince them enough or understand
well,
those connections. So there's your two governments. There's the previous one of the states, and then there's the new one with the federalized component. But they tie them together with the last word of the first phrase, which is mm-hmm. resident. And that's why they ask you if you're a resident of a state. Because if you're a resident of a state and you say yes, you're tied into the 14th Amendment because you reside.
Right.
Oh, they're slick. This thing is set up so slick. I still marvel at it. 27 years I've been studying it intently.
Wow. Well, it is amazing that people are so busy that they really don't remember what they heard on the news the week before. They just buy into what they hear or don't hear because the news is really not the news at all. It's just it's programming.
Yep, that's why they want you. Yeah. It's just like on that stuff I sent you right before the show. Deanna was not familiar with this Goldberg story yet, and so I popped her the links. I know you haven't had time to look at those, but you can kind of get the grasp of the story.
Oh, I did. I brought that link up, and I sent you several links. Also,
yes, I haven't had a chance to look at everything yet, but that's another developing story, and it gets to be amazing how in depth these people have weaseled their way into the key systems of our lives, so undetected for so long, still by some large percentage of the population still doesn't know this information or have this awareness. It's a you know, give the devil his due, I think is the old cliche, Deanna.
Right. Wow.
It's overwhelming. I'm just so glad to be out of her and down here, and it's taken me a while to get here, but at least now I can take this information and beam it back into the country and around the world so more and more people at least get their sanity back a little bit because they can understand what the hell's happening to them.
Right. It's, but there's so few people that really, really understand this. And I'm reading a book. People want to be, they don't want to be educated. They want to be amused.
Yes.
And which is very unfortunate.
Or entertained.
Entertained. Entertained. Amused is just another word for entertainment, right? And getting, we talked a little bit about Trump. And after the election, I wrote this article called We've Been Trumped. And I wrote it on November 19th of 2016. And he really just went along with the same program, the same PNAC policies that were in place before, and just told, and the people that he brought in as the finance vice chairs that he brought in, the finance co-chair people, if you read that list, and if you just spingola.com/trumped.html, at the bottom it says finance vice chairs: Sheldon Adelson, Dr. Miriam Adelson, Brian Ballard, Gentry Beach, Elliot Broidy, Robert Grand, Diane Hendricks, Tommy Hicks. It just goes on and on. And somebody said, let me just run down here. I don't remember what they said. I've been reading all these articles that you referred me to. But Louis M. Eisenberg was the chairman of the Board of Commissioners for the Port Authority. And he was involved in the Trump administration. And he held the senior leadership positions with the United Jewish Appeal. He was a billion-dollar Zionist charity, which is a billion-dollar Zionist charity organization. I have all of these citations about these people that he retained, that he brought into his administration. It's almost as if he was trying to recreate the Bush administration.
Well, I can tell
all
you
over
what,
again.
He sounded good on the campaign trail and said a lot of good things, and then he's let these people,
well, of course,
either voluntarily or by pressure, let them get all of these key positions filled with these neocon creeps, and it's absolutely repulsive, and that in itself makes me sick. And then this Goldstein information comes along, that whether it's true or not, we don't know, that 2 years ago he secretly converted.
Right. Let's talk about that.
Well, I don't know. it makes a lot of sense, really, but God, it's just the thought of it just gives me cold chills.
Okay, let's see. The White House admits that he did, in fact, convert. And there's an article, from the White House: Donald Trump converted to Judaism 2 years ago, according to White House official. President Donald Trump converted to Judaism 2 years ago and joined the Shabbat Lubavitch Synagogue in New York City, according to a high-level White House official. The story has allegedly been held by CNN's editors for months, but is due to be released within the next few days. David Elias Goldberg, a fellow at the Jewish Center of Anti-Semitic Study, has also interviewed the White House source. According to the source, Trump was pushed by his daughter Ivanka and his son-in-law Jared Kushner to join the faith. At first, Trump resisted, stating it could threaten his base of evangelical Christian voters. However, he had a change of heart and officially converted in early 2017. The ceremony was held in private and closely guarded for nearly 2 years. It appears the White House is prepared to slowly release this information, and by summer, it is expected Trump will fully address his new faith in an evening televised news conference. And it's official. And of course, we saw that he has been at the Wailing Wall with the Jewish skull cap on his head, and in addition to this, I also wrote about Bush when he was president, that he studied the Talmud every day, and I did this in an article called A Free Press, A Free Pass. He studied the Talmud every day and practiced the hand signs and did all of the stuff. And he had the kitchen was set aside as what do they call that?
Kosher.
The White House kosher. Yes. The reversal did not alter the warm and fuzzy friendship that probably precipitated the special event in Washington on December 6, 2005, when the White House kitchen became kosher. There's nothing wrong with eating kosher. Only the most devoted of the faith abide by this ancient practice. And so he made the kitchen kosher.
Well, he let that guy, there was the kosher... good, Daryl's going to join us here. That little noise is when either Windows does something or we have somebody join us, Deanna.
Right.
And so Daryl's here, and I want to welcome him. Let me get this out first, Daryl. There was a story 6 or 8 months ago, maybe a little less, about him releasing the head of the kosher mafia empire that was in jail. Did you see that, Dan? I wish I could remember all the details. But it was a guy that overrides the whole kosher slaughtering of animals that's kind of a mafia guy. Trump let him out of jail. He was sitting in jail. Hey, Daryl, how you doing, brother?
Well, I'm doing well and thoroughly enjoying listening to Miss Diana Spengola. Thank you very much for coming on today, Diane. It's been a real pleasure. It's nice to hear a woman's voice elaborate on so much important stuff. You know,
let me make one small correction. It's Deanna, Daryl, with the I.
Deanna.
I
stand corrected, and thank you. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
So I appreciated listening to your story about the your introduction to the tribe and their proclivities, and I'm very interested in what you were talking about with the conversion of Donald Trump. I dare say that I don't think it took much of a conversion. I think.
Well, anybody that could do business in Manhattan had to have a very close association with the tribe.
Well, okay. I think Mr. Cohen probably did a pretty good job of conditioning an early Donald, a young Donald Trump. But I see nothing inconsistent with Mr. Trump adopting the benefits of Judaism. I see nothing contradictory in his nature or character. I see that as being a pretty honest, consistent expression of his values. Personally, I mean, yeah.
Okay.
I watched on YouTube here last year where he was. I think it was on True News, Deanna, and he was being interviewed by some media personality of some prominence, and was asked, "When you became a Christian, and did you ask for repentance and forgiveness?" And he kind of sat there for a moment, sort of uncomfortably, with a sort of a quizzical look on his face, and then makes the very telling comment that, as to his knowledge, I'm sort of paraphrasing here, forgive me, he paraphrases by saying, well, after reflecting on the question, had he repented, he goes, I'm not aware of anything that I need to repent for in being a Christian. And so this is why I earlier said I don't see anything inconsistent with him officially adopting Judaism, because see, they see no need or desire to repent. They have ascended to apotheosis where they become gods. And I don't see anything inconsistent with that mentality with him. I think that he believes himself to be of some sort of demigod. And so woe be it to those who would blindly follow along. He's more dangerous than Hillary in regards to being able to affect an agenda and bringing in the Noahide laws.
I'll
pause.
Totally agree that he's more dangerous than Hillary. Yeah. If Hillary had gotten in there, everybody'd be up on arms. And now they think Trump's the savior.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate. And you can tell, what did Jesus say? By their fruits. Well, when you're giving away land that you don't own, to other people that don't own it, I'd say that those are pretty rotten fruits. Especially when they go back and name a town after you. Trumpville or whatever is the name of it.
Or a coin.
Jeez.
A coin. The Cyrus Trumpster coin. Deanna, I sort of have a rhetorical question here, but it's generally a real question, having said that. Is it possible that the American character, personality, spirit, intellect, whatever you want to call it, is it capable of being immune and resisting the same forces that sponsored the French Civil War, the French Revolutionary War, the Jacobeans? Are Americans capable of resisting? Do they have an immune system that can resist the Bolshevik Revolution? Even that, can they even resist what happened to the English when they were taken over during Cromwell and the murder of King James? See, this revolutionary process, as you said, you like history. Well, history shows their M.O., and all these other previous nations. Can Americans resist that?
Well, the problem I see is that when you look at the American military, they have spent their energy and their dedication to fighting what they view as enemies. They have been programmed to view the wrong people as enemies. And if you look at the number of suicides among the military and the way that they have been used and abused, it's a pretty sad situation because they have been used in the wrong way. I don't know. I think it would take a real change of, I don't know.
Well,
I really can't say.
What I feel like, Daryl, is that they'd have a lot more resistance in our country now than they had in those other situations you mentioned.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it's like Solzhenitsyn said, what would have happened if somebody would have just resisted?
Right.
Well, you know, Solzhenitsyn, what an amazingly wonderful man. He writes this book called 200 Years with
Right.
Them.
Right.
See, he can't even say who them is.
Right.
Okay. The so-called leading intellectuals and outspoken thinkers of today, Jordan Peterson, blah, 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 the Canadian, he can't even talk about it.
If you don't know your enemy, if you don't recognize your enemy, how are you going to go against them?
Well, you know, we can turn that stuff because everything's dialectic. And you remember what happened last weekend, Deanna? Not this past, but the weekend before, when they sent those drones out of Iraq into Beirut.
Oh, right.
And into
right.
Damascus. And Netanyahu tweeted about it. And he tweeted right. from the Talmud. And the verse he tweeted was, if someone comes to kill you, kill them first. Can we use that? How about if somebody comes to enslave you, enslave them first?
Well, I appreciate what you're saying, Roger. Yeah, but I'm not going to play by their rules, okay? I'm not going to play by their rules. And I think that's consistent. I think that's very consistent with the people that listen to this this program, Deanna, and participate and contribute, is that they, I was listening to you earlier, I appreciate your rebel spirit, and I agree with not going along with the herd. I'm a contrarian. It's irritated a lot of people my whole life. I've become rather good at it. And I ask people all the time, this is a question I ask them, when was the last time the majority were right about anything? Please tell me. I mean, I put it on them. When was the last time the majority was right about anything? And so majority thinking is a very dangerous, that's just another way of saying democracy, you know?
Deanna,
very dangerous.
Daryl is an equal opportunity offender.
Yeah. Well, you've heard of Deanna? Are you familiar with the term? It was used in the movies a lot. The MIB, Men in Black. You know, MIB, uh-huh. The Men in Black. Mm-hmm. Well, I have a different. I want to assign a different meaning to that acronym. You know, because of YouTube and all the censorship and the algorithms. You know, so. I refer to the MIBs as the men in beanies.
Ah.
And I particularly like to have fun with them. If I can use a little humor and ridicule them, I find it's good to make people laugh. If I can throw in a little ridicule, well-deserved ridicule, this is not inconsistent with the gospel and the scripture and what Jesus was interacting with them. He on numerous occasions ridiculed them. Well, of course, being wanting to be worshipped and pious, they didn't appreciate being ridiculed. They don't have a sense of humor. When it applies to them,
they still don't like it too much today.
No, no, they don't. And I appreciate. I've listened to you for years, Deanna, and really, it's so great to hear you on here. And
well, thank you.
Deanna, I think your voice has gotten stronger as the program's gone along, actually.
I think it has. And I have not coughed once. And recently, I would have to press the mute button and cough up garbage. I haven't coughed at all. So I am getting better.
Fantastic.
Energy medicine works.
Yes,
it really
does.
Now,
we've got several listeners that are involved in it. And, of course, you know, you may or may not remember my association with Dr. Flick, who invented Silverlon that I worked with for a few years. And that's what he's doing now is total energy medicine, too, frequency and magnetic healing.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's absolutely wonderful.
It works.
Yep.
It does work.
It works. It yeah. works.
Well,
it really does.
Deanna, I had a question for you. Do you still actively participate in researching history? And even because you've been at it for quite some time, way before I started.
Right now, I spend a great deal of time studying energy medicine and putting my time in that direction because this class is for certification, and so I have to know this stuff. So I have been doing that recently, and I've been doing studying a lot of legal kinds of things that are important for me to know. So it depends on the stage of your of what you're doing in life. But when you were chatting, when you were talking, I was thinking about when I was teaching quilting and going around to various organizations and putting on these little slideshows and presenting my quilts and whatnot. A quilt guild up in, I believe it was in Skokie, invited me, and they actually held it in a synagogue. And when I went in, I attempted to be very friendly and chat with the people that I was sitting there with, and nobody would talk to me. Gosh, it was just really, they were very rude. And then I always arrived early and got everything set up early, and then I got up and I gave my presentation. It lasted about an hour. And then I went back to my seat, and this lady said, "Well, gosh, if we knew who you were, we would have talked to you," which tells you exactly how they feel about themselves being so much better than anybody else.
They only hang out with the cool people. You got to be cool, okay?
Right.
You got to be one of the. You got to be in the clique. You got to be cool.
I wasn't one of them. I was a stranger. But to admit it like that, if we'd known that you were an important person who was giving us this demonstration, we would have talked to you. But they didn't. They knew that I was a stranger and that I wasn't worth spending any time with, or even to say hello, or smile.
They knew you were a little goy shiksa.
They knew that I was a Gentile, okay? And they weren't going to have anything to do with me until they found out that, oh, gosh, she's not just an ordinary Gentile.
The other particular thing about that story that's interesting is that it happened in a synagogue where they no doubt feel at home, like they're on their home ground.
Right. And I was invading. But I just thought of that story. It was kind of funny.
Yeah. Well, there's been a major expansion in synagogues now particularly down here in the I'm in Alabama, not originally from here, but I've noticed that there's a major expansion of synagogues. Of course, they have a different name for them here. They call them churches.
Yeah.
And but those are they've been rabbinified, it's pretty amazing to this go back to this comment you made earlier, Deanna. It was very insightful, profound statement of the cognitive dissonance, where they hold two conflicting values in their head simultaneously. Of course, this results in corruption of spirit and mental faculties. You're trying to reach logical conclusions based on false premises. Well, I can assure you, without much leap of faith here, that this isn't going to end well for the people that are doing this. It's kind of like people down in the Florida right now. Sometimes we feel like we're yelling against a hurricane, but if I can indulge for just a moment, what I realize with this system here, these people, the history, is that there's been a major population explosion. There's a bubble. They've blown a bubble. They've blown a population bubble, and it's based upon debt. if you follow the population growth and its rate of increase over the last 150 years, you see it's directly, not close, it's directly proportional to the debt expansion.
Right.
Well, what happens? Well, debt is credit and leverage. And so what happens if the bubble pops? Well, there's going to be a population reduction. Okay. And people, I don't think people realize, have internalized that it's not just a real estate bubble. It's a leveraged population bubble based upon a unsound foundation of debt. This is deadly.
Yep.
And
it is.
This is what drives me to be so, as the French would say, en garde.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what did you say earlier, Deanna? This is good for all the strong, manly men out in our audience to pay attention to. What did Deanna say earlier? Let me see if I can quote you, Deanna. You said, bring it on. Did I hear you right? Did you say that?
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you said bring it on. Okay, well, come on, guys.
Once they're exposed and you're not scared of them anymore, they lose their effectiveness.
That's right.
And once you really stand up to them, they're mute.
Yeah.
They are.
Well,
They go after children that are throwing rocks. They go after them with machine guns.
Yeah.
Okay? These people are what can I say?
Well, there are no words in our lexicon to describe them, in all honesty.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. Well, I like what you've done over many, many years, thousands and thousands of hours broadcasting, what Roger does, what so many people are doing. Well, here's what I see you guys doing. Showing others, teaching others. We don't have to take them on so much individually. Once you reclaim your identity and status, here, teach others. And this is what I really believe happens here, and you need to be acknowledged for your years and thousands of hours for that.
Well, you're one of the great examples of it taking effect on somebody, Daryl, because you do that. But I came to the conclusion that that's the only way to spread it. Because I've tried so many other ways, and I've seen so many people exposed to it, and there's only a small percentage of people that respond. So we need to find the responders and train them and all start working together, spreading the word, because they can't stop that. And that's receptive person to receptive person. Daryl's very good at it with all of his interactions, personal and business and stuff. And I'm trying to encourage people, and that's, well, I've tried to get everybody educated up to a point where you can present this easily, okay, and explain it relatively easily now too, certainly more so than we used to. You know, I did 3 shows with Joyce before she passed. We were friends mm-hmm. for many years, and I don't think Joyce ever did get it. I think she went to her grave
never did.
Not getting this.
Yep, she never did.
And it's just that way with some people. Yeah, go ahead, Daryl.
I don't know if Deanna's heard this before or not, but your mentor, Mr. John Benton, had a particular phrase he would use when trying to explain to people why he did what he did, and it had to do with his freedom. Can you relay that?
Yeah, John would get up there on stage. He turned into Superman, this mild-mannered, very meek-looking guy that got up on stage in front of people talking this stuff, and he literally just turned into a Superman, okay? And he'd get up there, Deanna, and he'd say, the only way I can protect my liberty is to help you protect yours.
That is very good, yes.
And yes. what I've had to find is that most people don't even know what liberty is, and you got to go.
They haven't a clue.
And start educating people and empowering them. And once they get on the path to self empowerment, like Daryl, they're off on it like a rocket ship.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I sort of had a good primer, Deanna. My previous life, I was an airline captain, and I'm used to being in charge of my own ship and being responsible, and I don't suffer fools or foolishness. And so I had to get over my own foolishness. I had to take myself to the woodshed, as a matter of fact, and reorient that I just couldn't buy my way out of, I'm making a lot of money here. I'll just, what's that tax? What's that? Whatever. Here, get out of my way. Quit bothering me. I had to get over that whole mentality of I'm comfortable. All right?
Right.
And so it's a very powerful influence on a lot of people until they experience the hurt and humility comes into their life. They can't appreciate, that they're spending a inheritance of freedom that was sacrificed by others, and you have to contribute that. You have to replenish that fund. And thank you again
for helping replenish us. Deanna, quick, before there's our wrestler there. I don't think you got time to give a long deal. Tell people how they can access you, your primary sites.
People may visit to me at spingola.com. And spingola.com. S is in Sam, P is in Paul, I-N-G-O-L-A. And I have a bunch of articles there, have links to my books, lots and lots of information, including a copy. If you just look at Noahide laws, you will find that we are now living under Noahide laws, and so many things.
Only citizens and residents of the United States are. Deanna, thank you. I'm really glad to see you back, girl. We'll have you back again soon, and continued speedy recovery. Okay.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you so much.
Yep, our pleasure, Deanna. We'll be back tomorrow with Paul, best I know, and look forward to hearing what he's got to say for us. So you guys have a great day, and I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks again, Deanna, and we're tickled to death.
Thank you, Deanna. Okay, you're welcome. Bye-bye.
Au revoir, madame. Bye-bye.
Mother Earth will swallow.